look at the impact of such a person, not only on his community, on his religion, his impact on the world. So without him, the world will be a poorer place in wisdom, in faith, and in courage. And because of that, I feel it's an opportunity for me as a Christian to look at a great person like this and celebrate his life.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we were talking about how committing sins has various different forms. The scope is quite vast. Sometimes when you should say something, for example, in support of the oppressed, you don't say something. That can be considered a sin. Sometimes when you shouldn't say something, for example, when you get angry, you shouldn't just say anything, but you do say stuff which is inappropriate. That, of course, is also considered a sin. And so there's various different, you know, aspects and various different forms and various different kinds of sins that we might be committing, but we don't even know. So we need to kind of take time out of our busy runaround schedules and reflect about these things so that we know what is a sin and what is not a sin and how to refrain from committing sins. Now, there are certain sins that we commit via actions. For example, God forbid we go to a club, or for example, we strike somebody that we should not be striking, an oppressive, tyrannical strike. Or there are certain things that we do with our actions which are considered to be sins. Now, of course, there is a verbal istighfar. We can verbally ask the Almighty Allah for forgiveness for these things that we have done. But there's another very practical thing that we can do, and that is to use those body parts of ours which we used to commit sin to do good. So, for example, we struck somebody, you know, with our hand. Well, we go do something with our hand that is good. You know, maybe we give charity. Maybe we help the poor and the needy. Or, for example, maybe we go and plant a tree in our community Islamic center, you know. Or, for example, you write an article, right? Or we looked at things which were haram and were prohibited. Well, go and look at things that are good. Go and read the Quran. Go and look at the Quran. Go and look at the beautiful shrines of the infallible and immaculate imams. If, for example, we walked into, God forbid, a club, well, why don't we go and do our best to go and walk into one of the shrines of the infallible and immaculate imams? And so in this manner, along with our verbal istighfar, we are committing a physical istighfar as well. And of course, all of this is related to our ubudiyah, because the more sins we commit, the farther away we become from Allah, and the weaker our ubudiyah becomes. But the more we purify ourselves from sins, the closer we become to Allah, and the stronger becomes our worship, our servitude, our obedience, and our ubudiyah to Allah.
Look what Karbala gave us. In return, what can we give? I thought I'd go there to die, but in fact I went there to live. You cannot
die. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
That you live on even though we're left grieving. And I will walk on the road you would walk.
in the limelight.
Lawyers have submitted graphic testimonies of torture and denial of medical treatment of Palestinians in Gaza to London's High Court in a bid to stop the UK government from issuing arms exports licenses to British companies supplying weapons to Israel. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "The UK is profiting from war crimes. This can and must be stopped." Lawyers have submitted graphic testimonies of torture and denial of medical treatment of Palestinians in Gaza to London's High Court in a bid to stop the UK government from issuing arms exports licenses to British companies supplying weapons to Israel, The Guardian has recently reported. The submission of more than 100 pages includes statements from 14 witnesses, including Palestinian and Western medical doctors working in Gaza's hospitals, as well as ambulance drivers, civil defense department workers, and aid workers, the report said. The case has been brought by NGOs including Al-Haq, Global Legal Action Network, GLAN, Amnesty International, Oxfam, and Human Rights Watch. The evidence, the report said, was designed to support a request for a court order that the UK government has acted irrationally in refusing to ban the sale of arms to Israel. The government had argued that there was not a clear risk the weapons would be used to commit breaches of international humanitarian law, the report added. One of the witness testimonies was from Dr. Ben Thompson, a Canadian kidney specialist, who said, "Every part of the healthcare system has been targeted and destroyed and is now completely incapable of providing care. So many people are dying from issues that are completely treatable." He said he had treated a patient who had been forced to stand for 48 hours, requiring a skin graft on his heel, The Guardian said. Thompson also said he had personally treated three children whom he could have saved if he had any access to the appropriate medicines. He further testified that he was forced to reset bones without pain medication and that a patient in his care had died on the floor in a pool of his own blood and brain matter. Dr. Khaled Dawas, a consultant surgeon at University College Hospital London, said many of his patients were victims of a sniper fire, adding that conditions in hospitals on both his trips were what he imagined medieval medicine must have been like. He said, "I understand that Israel justifies its attacks on hospitals by reference to its claim that the hospitals are overrun by militants, but in my 4 weeks in Al-Aqsa Hospital, I personally did not see a single one." The doctor also said he met many patients who had clearly been beaten in detention camps, and one patient who had been dragged along the ground by the external fixator holding his broken limb together. He said the case is the first attempt to place a graphic testimony of the Zionist regime crimes in front of a British judge. According to GLAN, the value of UK arms exports licenses reached a record high in 2022, with £8.5 billion in licenses issued. The UK have approved sales of lethal weapons to Israel's military again and again. "The UK is profiting from war crimes. This can and must be stopped," the organization said on its website. Flouting a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, The child killer regime of Israel has faced international condemnation amid its continued brutal offensive on Gaza. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for Genocide Against Palestinians, the Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza since October 7. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 40,139 Palestinians have been murdered and at least 92,743 wounded. Moreover, at least 11,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. The Zionist regime says that 1,200 of its troops were killed during the Al-Aqsa storm operation on October 7. The Zionist media published reports suggesting that many Israelis were killed on that day by friendly fire. Palestinian and international organizations say that the majority of the Palestinians murdered and wounded are women and children. The Zionist regime genocide in Gaza has resulted in an acute famine, mostly in northern Gaza, resulting in the death of many Palestinians, mostly children. The Zionist regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into the densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt, in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Later in the war, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians began moving from the south to central Gaza in a constant search for safety.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs
Allah هو ذا الرحمن
Allah
هو ذا المنان
لا إله إلا الله
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Ata, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani is over here in our studio to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah, we worship Allah, and no one but Allah.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani, do we have any ominous or sinister, it's better in simple terms, unlucky days and month in the Islamic calendar or not? Because I want to ask about the month of Safar and is it true that, for example, it will be unlucky or some unlucky days over there or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Honestly, not. You know, we cannot say that a specific day or time is something bad or evil for all the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all ibadullah ta'ala.
Yes.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, sometimes we have some specific times in which, for example, some bad events happen in the past or may happen in the future. But we cannot extend it all over the times and places and nations, people saying that, of course, it is nahs for all of them. It is no, we do not have. Every day is a good day. It depends that how do you live in that day? Do you commit sin? Do you take care about yourself? Do you observe all the rulings of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in that day? Are you a good servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in that day or not? That is why there are some people who might believe that some specific days are evil. Or no, I think this is not something that we can find very authentic or trustworthy kind of ayat or riwayat about this, that, for example, such a thing is completely evil, it's completely bad for all the people.
But for example, in the Holy Quran, we have, for example, the days or the times where, for example, the
some bad things happened.
The tribes of Ad, for example,
That is, but we cannot extend it to all the people, all the nations, you know? Because if that is the case, then every day some bad events happened in the past for every day of the
I'm sorry, the days that tragedies took place in the life of history of Islam, for example, the martyrdom of an infallible imam or the demise of Prophet Muhammad, are they naturally, we can say, are they naturally embedded with a kind of unlucky, ominous events? I mean, for example, the missing of such person, because we miss such a person, for example, through a happening. It could be martyrdom, it could be, for example, a war, it could be a disease or something like that. We miss such a person. Can you consider it as unlucky for the people?
You know, as I told you, of course, it might be possible that some very bad or we can say catastrophic, tragic kind of events happened in some specific days and times and places.
All right.
Now, the question is that can we consider that specific place or that specific, for example, time as an evil time, as an evil place? Of course not.
All right.
It's totally wrong. For example, and the place like Karbala, the tragedy of Karbala happened there.
Yes.
Now millions of people go for ziyarah of Abdullah al-Husayn al-Sahab. Yes. Is it an evil place? Is it a nahs place, for example,
as ominous place,
That is, it is said in riwayat, rather that this place, Bain al-Haramain, are the piece of Jannah.
Yes.
Jannah's land, you know, we can say. There is the best place in which our dua will be accepted. There is the best place that our guna or ma'asi or sins will be forgiven by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
All right.
This is the place of rahmah. This is the place that all the blessings of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is being showered always, every moment
on the people.
Do you know
what's the reason that people say such things?
No one consider the land of Karbala as what? As an evil land. The most tragic kind of event happened in So this is tragic,
Yes.
And then, or for example, we have many prophets, salawatullahi alayhim ajma'in. So they were killed, they were murdered in very bad kind of manner in the history. So can we consider all those times as an evil time? Of course not. Of course not.
Some people might say that because, for example, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was killed in Karbala, Lady Zainab used to curse this land, okay? So, for example, or curse the people who have killed Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
That's
so
true. That is
it
true.
It brought a kind
people,
of,
yes.
Can we say that it brought a kind of, for example, bad luck to the region or something?
No. I can never say this because in our riwayat, in our hadith, we do not have any authentic riwayat in which we say that a specific time or place is nahs and evil for all forever. You know, this is the point. Forever. We cannot say, for example, that specific day is a bad day and an evil day for all the people, wherever they are, whenever they are. No, of course not. Specifically, sometimes in relation to some specific people, specific group of people, or maybe specific personalities in the history, of course, some bad things, evil things might happen, might occur, but we cannot generalize it. We cannot generalize it to the whole people,
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Inshallah.
Prophet Muhammad passed away in this month. Can it be a reason for the unluckiness? Never.
Okay. Many prophets, we have 124,000 prophets.
Yes.
So they all.
No, because he was the last prophet and we missed him.
We have many great prophets like Prophet Ibrahim, okay, alayhi salatu wasalam, Prophet, okay, Sulaiman, Prophet Musa, right, Prophet. We have Anbiya alayhi salatu wasalam. So all of them passed away in some days. Can we consider all the days as the evil days? Of course not.
You know, after Zalqada, Zalhajja, and Muharram, which used to be the haram month, and
one point I wanted to add, you know. Okay. Sometimes, for example, yes, to respect Abu Abdullah's martyrdom anniversary, it's better, for example, not to hold, for example, some kind of happy sort of
ceremonies,
in that day. Yes. That's good.
Okay.
That's a good idea. But it doesn't mean that that day is an evil
unlucky
day. No.
Yes.
Unlucky.
Okay.
Yes.
And as I said, Shaykh, the month of Safar comes after Zilqa'dah, Zilhajjah, and Muharram, which used to be haram month. I mean, in terms of haram, is that
it is
nobody
haram,
could
yes.
nobody could blood shed blood or war or something.
Haram, yes.
And this is the first month in which that, for example, it is not haram. In Safar, the battles got started. So could it be a good reason for the unlucky days of the month?
No. There is no any riwayah, no any authentic hadith in which it is said, for example, that the whole month of Safar is evil month. No, we do not have such a thing from the Islamic perspective.
All right.
From the riwayat and hadith, you know, from the ayat of the Holy Quran. But of course, there are some daif kind of riwayat and hadith about this nuhusa of this month, that they are not trustworthy. We should not consider them as authentic kind of hadith and riwayat.
Okay.
But of course, in this month, if you pay some sadaqah, that's good.
I wanted to ask you this. What are the practical guidelines in order for a person to be saved from the unlucky happenings, it's better to call it, or the evil heart. For example, we have evil eye, evil tongue, evil, for example, that's all right, evil soul and evil heart of the people. I mean, the complex that are in the other people about you. What are the barriers, Islamically speaking, in order to apply?
This is another point, you know?
Yes.
That some specific people, specific places, specific time be considered as evil for some special or specific person, group, or locations. This cannot be ignored, you know?
Okay.
But the point is that we cannot generalize these sort of things for all the people all over the world forever. For example, we say something is wrong, is evil. That's not acceptable. But of course, as I say, that giving sadaqah or charity, not only in the month of Safar, in the other months, it is a very good kind of action. You can give sadaqat, you can make du'as, you can, you know, be a good ibadullah ta'ala, subhanahu wa ta'ala. And these are the things that is true. We have in riwayat and ahadith these sort of things that Islam also encourages us to do these kind of things, to be saved from the evil eyes, for example, evil souls, evil...
Yes.
Jinns, or
yes.
for example, these sort of things. Yeah, that is true.
And are there any recommendations to be done on these special occasions, the sad occasions of the Islamic calendar, like the demise anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, or the martyrdom anniversary of, for example, an infallible imam? Are there any recommendations to be done, for example, in terms of holding majalis or doing some specific actions?
Yeah, for example, holding some kind of majalis for Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, to talk about the Ahlul Bayt, about fada'il of Ahlul Bayt, about the virtues of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, to introduce them, introduce their teachings, doctrines to the people. It has lots of thawab. That majlis will be majlis al-ibadah.
Yes.
We see the dhikru aliyyan ibadah.
So
when we talk about Ahlul Bayt, when you hold some kind of gatherings, meetings, for the Ahlul Bayt, that's good. When they, in the martyrdom anniversaries of the Ahlul Bayt, we can hold sessions, gatherings, meetings. That's good. There's no any doubt about that.
So all in all, we could say that no day or no specific month or no specific occasion can be considered
generally for all the people, for all the time, all the places. As, no, that's wrong.
And we have no evil day or something like that. For example, when a person...
We don't have such a thing.
Yes. It could be that a person, we miss a person through an event, a tragedy like Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Something be considered
or a catastrophe. But it is not so that, for example, this is taking place...
For all the people.
For it is for all the people. And for sure, the world loses one of his best men on such a day.
Every day might lose.
Yes. Okay. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani.
You're welcome.
For a nice elaboration on this topic, whether the months of Safar and the other specific days in the Islamic calendar are considered as ominous, sinister, or unlucky or not. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. Please, for more information, visit our website at parstudio.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, being modest in our behavior when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here on A to Z. So we are talking about having modesty in our behavior when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. So this Islamic lifestyle, of course, is this pure, this blessed, this beautiful, this really auspicious, noble, and honorable lifestyle, a perfect lifestyle that the Almighty Allah has put forth for human beings, has ordained for human beings, so that human beings can attain this eternal bliss and even temporary bliss in this very world, but more so eternal bliss in the hereafter. This Islamic lifestyle, it brings balance, it brings harmony, it brings peace, it brings serenity to a human being. So we're talking about modesty in our behavior, right? So you can be modest in various different manners. You can be modest in your clothing. You can be modest in your speaking. You can be, of course, modest in your behavior. Now, we live in a day and an age where you see a lot of immodest behavior. And, of course, you see this in movies or in the music industry or like I said, the film industry or advertisements, and the various different media, social media that we use, there's a tendency for the mass media and even in the social media to promote immodest behavior. And of course, this immodest behavior is something that we might end up replicating in our lives. And so we have to be very careful. And I'm not talking about the gray areas between modest and immodest behavior. Let's at least talk about, you know, those things that are overtly immodest, and one understands that these are immodest behaviors. The least that we can do is not do those things. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about modest behavior as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So, of course, our behavior is the way that we interact with other people around us, whether that is online, because all of a sudden the online behavior of a human being is now an extension of their own behavior. But not just online behavior, but our actual physical behavior with other people. We have to be very careful to have modest behavior and at all times kind of carry this composure, you know, and not fall into the traps of shaitan and the Satan and the devil when it comes to our interactions with other people. So when it comes to immodest behavior, of course, we know that, for example, flirting with the opposite gender, of course, is a kind of an immodest behavior. Now, you know, we have to look deep within ourselves and kind of scrutinize how we behave, you know, saying hello, perhaps even smiling to another human being is not necessarily immodest behavior. But if our intention is to give a, you know, a kind of a smile that you know what I mean, kind of a smile, well, then that is considered to be immodest behavior. And we have to be very careful in order to not fall into this kind of a immodest behavior. Or sometimes our actions, our body language, all of these things can have a variable to them, which can be considered to be immodest. And so we have to be careful to stay away from immodest behavior when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The United Nations Human Rights Office says the alarming Israeli settlement expansion and legal changes in the occupied West Bank fly in the face of international law. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has covered this story and tells us more. Israel has approved the construction of a new settlement on a UNESCO World Heritage Site near the occupied West Bank city of Beit Lahm as the Israeli military continue to raid areas across the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli regime's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, said recently that his office had completed its work and published a plan for the new Nahal Helet settlement in Gush Etzion. Smotrich said in a message on X that the new approval was a response to actions by the Palestinian West Bank leadership and countries which have recognized the Palestinian state. In May of this year, Spain, Ireland, and Norway joined the majority of United Nations states that have recognized a Palestinian state. Bezalel Smotrich himself, a settler, said, "No anti-Israel or anti-Zionist decision will stop the development of the settlement. We will continue to fight against the dangerous idea of an independent Palestinian state. This is the mission of my life." Peace Now, an Israeli anti-settlement group, denounced the new settlement plan, saying it is a wholesale attack on an area renowned for its ancient terraces and sophisticated irrigation systems, evidence of thousands of years of human activity. Peace Now said these actions are not only fragmenting Palestinian space and depriving large communities of their natural and cultural heritage, they also pose an imminent threat to an area considered to be the highest cultural value to humanity. The Palestinian Self-Rule Authority has also reiterated that settlement construction and the demolition of Palestinian homes constitutes ethnic cleansing. According to a European Union report, the Israeli regime advanced plans for 12,349 homes to be built in the West Bank last year. Most United Nations member states consider settlements built in the West Bank and other Palestinian territories captured by Israel in 1967 as completely illegal under international law. The latest approval comes at a time of heightened tensions in the West Bank and Eastern Al-Quds over the Israeli regime's hostilities that have massacred more than 40,000 innocent Palestinians in the Gaza Strip since October of last year. According to Palestinian Health Ministry figures, the Israeli military and Israeli settlers have assassinated hundreds of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since 7th of October last year. The website Relief Web has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United Nations Human Rights Office says the alarming Israeli settlement expansion and legal changes in the occupied West Bank fly in the face of international law. In a press release on Monday, 19th of August, the United Nations body said such measures violate a landmark ruling by the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, in July. In its advisory opinion of 19th of July, the International Court of Justice held that Israel's policies and practices amount to annexation of large parts of the occupied Palestinian territories. The ICJ called for the evacuation of all Israeli settlers from the occupied Palestinian territories. According to the press release, illegal settlements, settler violence, and the presence of settlers are the root cause of the majority of human rights violations in the occupied West Bank, including Eastern Al-Quds. It emphasized that the recently announced construction of new settlement plans in Nahal Heletz, west of Beit Lam, remains unlawful under international law. The ICJ, the International Court of Justice, pointed out, "In the case of Nahal Heletz, the building of a new settlement in this strategic area severely compromises the livelihood, safety and movement of Palestinians living in five surrounding villages, whilst posing a significant threat to the continuity and viability of an independent Palestinian state." Several Palestinian groups have hailed the decision made by the International Court of Justice, deeming the Israeli regime's settlement activities in the occupied West Bank as illegal. The United Nations top court, the ICJ, announced the decision concerning the 230-plus settlements that have been built in the occupied West Bank, including Eastern Al-Quds, since the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territory in 1967. The ICJ noted that the construction and existence of the structures on the territory amounted to de facto annexation of the land, as well as possible discrimination and apartheid. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said the ICJ's decision affirmed the illegitimacy of the Zionist regime's occupation and the need to bring it to an end. Hamas added, "We call on the international community to embrace these decisions, bypass the American will to protect the Israeli regime against such decisions, and work to compel the fascist occupation to implement them and comply immediately." Euronews has also covered the same story and tells us more. More than 20 members of the European Union Parliament have called for a trade ban with illegal Israeli settlements, emphasising the need for a major shift in European Union policy following the groundbreaking decision by the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, regarding Israel's unlawful annexation of Palestinian territory. The 21 members of the European Parliament, in a recent letter to the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, and to Josep Borrell, the High Representative of the EU, demanded that the 27 member states of the European Union bloc must align themselves with the findings of the United Nations highest court, the ICJ, the International Court of Justice. The members of the European Parliament called for an EU ban on trade with settlements based on the ICJ opinion that states must take steps to prevent trade or investment relations that assist the maintenance of the illegal situation created by Israel in the occupied Palestinian territories. The letter added, "The ICJ's historic opinion must be regarded as a pivotal moment for the European Union to recalibrate its policy towards Israel, set to bring about the end of its unlawful occupation, enable a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, ensure freedom and safety for the Palestinian people, and resolutely defend the international legal order." Moreover, Australia recently implemented sanctions and travel restrictions on illegal Israeli settlers who have been charged with committing violent offences against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Announced by the Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong, the sanctions were directed at seven Israeli settlers and a hardline youth settler group, Hilltop Youth, which is known for setting up new illegal settlement outposts. Penny Wong said in a statement, "The individuals sanctioned today have been involved in violent attacks on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. This includes beatings, sexual assault and torture of Palestinians, resulting in serious injury and in some cases death." The group Hilltop Youth consists of hardline extremist and religious nationalist youth who establish illegal settlements on Palestinian lands. The Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong said, "The entity sanctioned is a youth group that is responsible for inciting and perpetrating violence against Palestinian communities." On 27th of June this year, the group's far-right owner, Mayor Ettinger, was earlier sanctioned by Canada, when it announced sanctions against seven Israeli settlers and five organizations for their violent and destabilizing actions against Palestinian civilians and their property in the occupied West Bank. Recently, the Norwegian government also aligned with the European Union to implement sanctions against extremist illegal Israeli settlers on Palestinian territories.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoint on Imam Hussein's uprising and the Arbaeen Walk. People from tens of countries participate in Arbaeen Valley and they become the guests of the people of Iraq. We should try to strengthen the already firm bonds between Muslim brothers, the bond between Iraqis and non-Iraqis, the bond between Shia and Sunni, and the bond between Arabs, Fars, Turks, and Kurds. These bonds are a source of bliss. They are a sign of divine mercy. The enemy is trying to create discord, but he has failed, and by Allah's favor and grace, he will continue to fail. We, Iran and Iraq, are two nations which are interconnected. Our bodies, our hearts, and our souls are connected together. What has created this connection is faith in Allah and love for Ahlul Bayt, greetings be upon them, and for Hussein ibn Ali, praise be upon him. And by Allah's favor, this will increase on a daily basis. The enemies will hatch plots, but it will be of no avail.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
From the beginning of the Islamic Revolution until today, it has been 40 years that the U.S., its cohorts, its agents, and its mercenaries have been scheming and doing various activities. They spend money, issue threats, and impose sanctions. However, despite their foolish desires, in the past 40 years, the Islamic Republic has changed from a thin sapling to a strong tree, whose root is firmly fixed and its branches reach to heavens. The Holy Quran, chapter 24, verse 14. I hope that by Allah's favor, the slogan that you are chanting against the U.S. and the Zionist regime and against the enemies and the arrogant will be realized in a not-too-distant future. And by Allah's favor, you will succeed in doing that. Once more, I would like to express my gratitude and I will tell you that the Iranian nation is grateful to you, dear Iraqi brothers, with all its heart. In particular, the people of Iran are grateful to you owners of Arbaeen Mawaqib. We are grateful to you from the bottom of our hearts. I would like to end with this couplet by Muntanabi. When you treat an honorable person with respect, you will win his heart.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you. Things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Europe has recorded a new significant spike in gas prices over the past 2 weeks. European natural gas benchmark Dutch TTF's price soared 30% to a nine-month high of 41 euro per megawatt hour on Tuesday. The Dutch TTF is a virtual trading hub in the Netherlands, serving as a key price benchmark for the European gas market used by international traders. However, this increase is much smaller compared to August 2022, when EU gas prices skyrocketed by 1,000% compared to previous decades, following the start of the war in Ukraine and the EU's subsequent decision to sever long-standing energy ties with Russia. Some analysts believe the spike is due to the ongoing conflicts in Ukraine and West Asia.
The new energy speculative bubble in Europe is due to the Ukraine's invasion of the Russian province of Kursk, from where Russian energy giant Gazprom pumps gas to Europe, and Israel's war on Gaza. This has prompted traders to act in anticipation of a cut in flows, which frankly I don't think will occur yet at this stage.
Geopolitical crises in Eastern Europe and West Asia have raised the question about to what extent speculation could drive gas prices. Large energy corporations that have historically dominated the sector worldwide have largely profited from such crisis.
The objective since the beginning of NATO's expansion towards Russia was to replace Russian gas supplies to Europe with US's LNG supplies. In Italy, we are now paying US gas supplies 10 times more. It's been a shameful speculation.
Last month, Italy's energy authority ARERA said in a report that the country had the highest gas prices in Europe in 2023, with an average virtual trade point price of around 43 euros per megawatt hour.
From a businessman perspective, this new spike in the cost of energy is very much concerning, as it impacts our operational costs, which are becoming unsustainable. Families as well are very much affected, as you can imagine, with salaries not keeping up with the cost of living.
Energy Authority ARERA also added that the gas prices in Italy have remained well above the average seen before the price shocks that followed the start of the conflict in Ukraine in February 2022. Max Civili, Rome.
Large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises this week featured dozens of live-fire drills, many near the demilitarized zone, the heavily fortified border with the DPRK. The war games come amid tit-for-tat activities across the border. South Korea's unification minister labels Pyongyang's response to anti-DPRK propaganda from the south as provocative.
North Korea says it's sending the garbage balloons because of anti-North Korea leaflets, but I think that's just North Korea's claim. It's sending the garbage messages to disrupt our society and create public anxiety. That's why our government has taken firm measures, such as resuming the use of loudspeakers.
The propaganda broadcasts into the DPRK are part of South Korea's peace through strength strategy, involving demonstrations of South Korean and U.S. weaponry, including nuclear-capable strategic assets. South Korea's policy toward the DPRK has been shifting between peacemaking and hostility in recent years, depending on the administration in office in Seoul. Now, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's hard line has generated heightened military tensions and concerns of a potential violent clash, particularly along the DMZ. Civil society leaders and many South Koreans oppose the joint U.S. drills and view President Yoon's offer of dialogue as right-wing lip service.
They are continuously raising the issue of human rights in North Korea and conducting military exercises to create this atmosphere of fear, announcing contradictory policies. But what's really important is to show that we're sincerely interested in dialogue.
South Korea's Ministry of Interior and Safety Thursday held a civil defense drill for the first time, simulating what they call a North Korean nuclear or WMD attack. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Thousands of pro-Palestinians marched outside the Democratic National Convention, which is doing its best to censor the issue of Israel's attempted genocide in Gaza. No pro-Palestinian activist has been granted a main stage speaking slot to address the party, and the word ceasefire has barely been heard. This is even as Democratic operatives are trying to convince America that their presumptive nominee, Kamala Harris, is not the same as outgoing President Joe Biden.
She's still considered the same until she does different. People are infantilizing her, saying because she said ceasefire, but she refuses to do an arms embargo, and she still is a friend of AIPAC. So we are not believing anything until we see some concrete decisions made on an arms embargo.
Many were expecting violent civil disobedience this week, but Biden's quitting the race did appease some of the intense anti-democratic party sentiment. However, organizers say that such fear-mongering was always a manipulation designed to discredit protesters beforehand.
Folks like the ADL and JUF held these press conferences in which they said, we're going to commit violence against Jews and we're going to do all of these things, because they have been put in the position of defending genocide, and you can't do it. And so when you have an indefensible position, you attack your opposition. And so there's going to be riots, there's going to be killing, there's going to be whatever ridiculous things that they said. The reality is that we are a very disciplined movement that believes in a variety of tactics, and we knew that we would be able to handle masses of people this week.
Last week, the Biden-Harris administration approved another huge arms package for Israel, this one amounting to $20 billion. Many said it showed that the Democratic Party has completely ignored the global support for Palestine.
Ever since Joe Biden was forced out by America's elite donor class, Democrats appear to be hoping that voters will simply forget Kamala Harris's co-culpability in arming and supporting Israel. Protesters here say they underestimate just how important Gaza is to so many different types of voters.
The Monday protest was historic. It really was, because we had 20,000 people in the streets. We had them from the black community, Latino, Asian, Native American, white, all nationalities, all religions, people who have no religion, everybody united, even though they all were addressing their own communities and their own community issues, immigrant rights, police accountability, black liberation.
Organizers say they never expected to change Democratic Party policy with 4 days of protests, but they'll keep fighting for human rights in Palestine. A major demonstration against the Democratic Party is planned for the final day of their convention. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
For decades, mosques in Gaza have been considered the most reverted sites, not only because they are religious places, but also due to their cultural values. Many of these mosques were built in ancient times and had historic values, which indicate how deeply rooted they are in this land. Therefore, Palestinians in Gaza have been spiritually and culturally attached to them. Successive generations of Palestinians have recited the Holy Quran, observed their religious rituals, and taken part in other cultural activities at those mosques.
Amid this war, the Israeli occupation has never left any place undestroyed, including the mosques. According to international law, it's prohibited to target holy places. However, the Israeli forces hit and destroy our mosques. For example, the mosques in Al-Baraj refugee camp have been completely destroyed. It's a